Session number 10640.
Major Jack, real form.
In his book, this is a quotation from it, he refers to the seizure of Italian troops and what they did to them. It reads as follows, quote, "All the Italian troops, the entire 3rd Battalion of the 259th Regiment of the Murghi Division, were put to death. Many corpses were tossed into the Rama River, several got caught among the logs, and I shared with our officers a malicious joy at the thought of Italian officers on the bridges and embankments of Mostar, stricken with horror at the sight of the Noretva choked with the corpses of their soldiers." Another quote from one of his books, quote, "To settle accounts, this is the most precious passion in life," unquote. Quote, "The human heart can find peace and pleasure only in returning evil for evil," unquote. Quote, "Vengeance, this is the breath of life, mother's milk and sister's vow. It was all, unquote. And then there's a question of the forced repatriation of Russian and Yugoslav refugees by the British authorities in the spring and summer of 1945. And amongst these, there were a large number of Chetniks, of royalists, who had retreated across Yugoslavia and fled across the border in the face of attacks from the partisans. And it was with the Yugoslav government, the communist government, that we negotiated to hand back these men and women who had been our allies. Now, Gilas says here in this interview that the British certainly had some 20 to 30,000 of these people in their hands. And he then goes on to say, "But to be quite frank with you, we didn't at all understand why the British insisted on returning these people. We believed in the ideological context prevailing at the time that the British would have a good deal of sympathy with these refugees, seeing that they had fled communism. We thought the British would show class solidarity with them, and some of us even feared they would enlist them for future use against communist governments, especially our own. Yet to our very great surprise, they did none of these things but delivered them into our hands." And then he goes on, "Imbecility above all, they ought to have looked at the character of our government, such as it was, and drawn their own conclusions." And here he's criticizing the British. "Yes, the British did completely the wrong thing in putting those people back across the border." And then he goes on to confess, "And we did completely the wrong thing in shooting them all. But nevertheless, these our allies were shot." It may not generally be known, but the Americans, who had been rescued by Mihailovich, and they numbered, as you know, very nearly 500 American airmen and so on, when Mihailovich was captured and was going to be tried, they requested that witnesses should be allowed to go and testify in his defense. This was turned down by the Yugoslav government. As a result of this, these Americans decided to hold a trial in America of Mihailovich in absentia, with these witnesses giving their evidence. And I won't go through it all, because it's a few hundred pages, but there wasn't a single case of any of the Americans who gave evidence saying that he had seen any act of collaboration on the part of Mihailovich or any of his forces, which I think is quite interesting, because they had all of them covered a huge distance to get to the evacuation area. Now, one of the important witnesses was Colonel McDowell, who had led the American mission, which was sent in spite of Churchill's objections, by the American president to try and rescue the rest of the American airmen. We'd brought out about 40 with us, but there were another 430 or so, or 450 in the country. And so McDowell went in to bring them out with some other American officers with him. He was a colonel who was an expert in Balkan affairs. He'd passed many, many years in between the two wars working in the Balkans. He spoke the language, and so he was not just an officer dropped in for no particular reason. And in answering interrogations, here are some of the things he said, and I quote, at the trial. "From my personal observations and those of reliable American and British officers, it is clear that the peasants and intellectuals in Serbia, in large majority, not only respected but loved General Mihailovich. While we were retreating, closely attacked by the communists, it was normal for the roads to be lined, even at night, by peasants with tears running down their cheeks, who passed out water and food to the men and called down God's blessing on the general. These peasants knew that in a few hours they would be in the power of the communists. As for intellectuals, I was able to establish that about two-thirds of the faculty of the University of Belgrade was active in the organization of General Mihailovich. In each district I visited, I found brigades or battalions of students who were the most ardent supporters of the general. That's one quotation. And here is another one. On the basis of all the evidence available, it is my judgment that the Germans held greater hatred and fear of Mihailovich than of Tito, and concentrated proportionately more active troops on Chetnik, that is, royalist, than in partisan territory. There is clear evidence that claims made by and for Tito as to his contribution have been very greatly exaggerated. The most important acts of sabotage against Axis communications were, in fact, performed by Chetniks. Both Mihailovich and Tito contributed to the Allied cause, but the ability of the Yugoslavs to contribute was substantially lessened by the Civil War. The evidence is clear that Mihailovich was ready to place his forces under Anglo-American command and to cooperate with Tito, while the latter was unwilling to so subordinate his cause to the winning of the war against the Germans. In the light of all the evidence, it is my judgment that Mihailovich attempted a greater contribution than did Tito and accomplished more in proportion to his means. Unquote. Finally, one more quote. It says, I have absolutely no evidence of any collaboration on the part of General Mihailovich and Axis forces of occupation. The resistance of General Mihailovich to Axis forces was limited only by his means, by the almost constant attacks on his forces on the part of the communists, and by the weight of German reprisals against his people.
These testimonies, we should say, are all contained in Martin's book.
They're all contained in Martin's book, which is called Patriot or Traitor. That's... Talking of Mihailovich as an individual, there is a quotation which I'd like to make here from Nora Beloff's book, Tito's Flawed Legacy, which reads as follows. Quote, at a time when Tito and his men were blasting the British as warmongers, British officers in Belgrade representing all three forces were getting to know members of the Serb general staff and examining them with them the increasing likelihood that Yugoslavia would be dragged into war. We're talking, of course, about the pre-invasion period. In the summer of 1940, Colonel Clark, the head of the British military mission, and the junior naval attaché, Alexander Glenn, were told that in the event of an occupation of Yugoslavia, the planning of internal resistance was being entrusted to a certain staff officer, Colonel Draža Mihailović. Glenn invited Mihailović to several private dinners and now writes of him with respect. Quote, a man whom I am proud to have known, a man of honour, serious, well-informed, a good listener, articulate when he spoke, and I found him broad in his understanding, with loyalty to the whole of Yugoslavia and not to a narrow Serb hegemony. Unquote. It was after the war that Churchill was more open, perhaps, about... the result of the policy which he had followed in Yugoslavia. In December 45, at a dinner party in Brussels, he was reported by the journal Europe and America, and also by Time and Tide, as saying, quote, during the war I thought I could trust Tito. He promised me to observe the agreement he had concluded with Subasic, who was the Yugoslav Prime Minister. But now I'm aware that I committed one of my biggest mistakes in the war. Sir John Colville later stated, quote, this certainly represents Mr. Churchill's views, but I doubt if he will say so publicly except under provocation. He certainly won't accept any arguments to the contrary, unquote. And then, at the time of Mihailovich's trial after his capture, his trial by the communists in Belgrade, April 9th, 1946, Churchill requests Bevan, who was then the Foreign Secretary, because Churchill was out of power, to secure with the Yugoslav government a fair trial for Mihailovich. Attlee refused to intervene, as he thought such action would offend the Labour Party. Hence, the British government refused even to request the British officers should attend to testify in Mihailovich's defence. The Americans made such a request, but the Yugoslav government rejected it. Hence, no defense witnesses attended the trial, either from America or from Britain. Finally, an interesting quote, 27th of August, 47, Tito, in a speech on the occasion of his election as an honorary member of the Zagreb Yugoslav Academy, said, quote, I have outsmarted and deceived that old fox Churchill, unquote. And I think that really sums it up. My own hope is that whoever the people are who are responsible for persuading Churchill to pursue this policy should express their regrets at what followed.
Could I ask you about Mihailovich's trial, about your own reactions at that time when you heard that he was going on trial?
Well, I was then in Trieste on Lord Harding's staff, and when I heard that the trial was taking place, I was in touch with my friends in London, and Bill Bailey and Kenneth Greenlees and Eric Greenwood, who were all important people in the resistance, were writing letters to the government and writing letters in the Times and so on, putting the Mihailovich case and urging the government to ensure that the trial was a fair one and defense witnesses should be heard. I left it to them because they were there, and I felt that they could deal with it adequately, as well as anyone could. I had the interesting job of talking to the press representatives who were passing through Trieste on their way to attend the trial. And Lord Harding asked me to brief them and to tell them what I knew about Mihailovich, which I did.
Whereabouts were you in 1945 when the Yugoslav refugees were being sent back?
I think I was in Norway.
Did you hear about it?
No, I didn't.
Now, earlier on, you were telling me about your school days at prep school, that you actually knew Klugman and MacLean when you were very young. Can you tell me what you knew about them then?
About Klugman, I can tell you absolutely nothing. I've got no memory of him at all. I just recognized his face and his name and the connection between his name and his face when I went into the office, SOE office at Rustam Buildings in Cairo. As far as MacLean's concerned, he was a close friend of mine at the age of 12, and we were together a lot, and he was a marvelous companion. He was very funny, and we enjoyed enormously larking about with him. That's really all I've got to say. There are just one or two little quotations which I think fit in rather well with the story. One is the reference many years ago to this very complicated Schleswig-Holstein problem. And it was said that only three people really understood the problem. You'll probably remember it. But one is dead, one is mad, and the other's forgotten all about it. And we are getting to the stage in relation to this problem, which I think is somewhat similar. So it is important to get evidence while people are in compos mentis.
Who knows about it apart from you, firsthand?
Well, people like Eric Greenwood and Mike Lees and people like that, and Jasper Rutenstil. Another quotation which I think is interesting is Lenin's concept that morality is subordinate to politics. And my word, that certainly was Tito's motto as well. And finally, which I think will be reflected on some characters perhaps still alive, Lenin's comment on left-wing intellectuals in the Western world, quote, useful idiots, unquote.
Do you have in your possession any documentary evidence to indicate that Mihailovich was not, in the eyes of the Germans, a collaborator?
Well, I have actually just one or two. There were, of course, a huge number of posters put up, and wherever I went in the villages and saw these posters, they were so bad for the local morale, an indication with the names and the villages of the people who've been shot as hostages, that I always used to tear them down. But I did keep one or two. I've got, I think, three, and this is an important one, because it actually names Mihailovich, and it is dated the 12th of November 1942, and it is one part of it's in German, one side of it, and the other part of it is in Yugoslav, and it is a big poster, 4 feet wide and 2 feet high, and the text reads, The following were condemned to death by the special court of the command of the Security Police Services Belgrade on the 12th of November 42 and shot on account of espionage and sabotage in favour of Draža Mihailović. And there follows 20 names, followed by the names of the villages from which these people came. This is not an indication, in my view, that Mihailović could be termed in any way a collaborator. I also have a photocopy of an order which was posted to a certain number of people, including Draža Mihailović and 14 of his staff officers, saying that if he didn't surrender on a certain day, this was dated in March 1942, that all the families would be taken hostage. And one of these people, who is still alive, sent it to me the other day, and he said that he has reckoned that he was the only survivor of the whole team of 15. That also is not a way that you would treat someone who was collaborating with you.